Serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is that there is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any cause. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. My name is Bob S., and I'm an Al-Anon. I got to tell you a funny one. Last year at this meeting, we had all these people up here with 40 years or more of sobriety. And the first guy got up to give his talk, and he looked around and he said, "Hey, there's no big book here." So the call went out, "Has anybody got a big book?" Now there's 3,000 or 4,000 years of sobriety sitting out there. The dead silence. Finally, one person walked up with a big book, and it was me, an Al-Anon. They say everyone has their minute of glory, huh? But I've noticed ever since then, there sure is one up here. Now, let's see, a couple of announcements. The tapes are available. Dave Duncan of this whole meeting, not only this meeting, but everything that's gone on before. I would like you to remember in your thoughts Benoit Shaw. Her husband, Jim Shaw, is a wonderful AA, which many of us know died yesterday afternoon. I've got one little thing that I would like to do. I met a person here this morning who died desperately to be here to get the medallion last night, but couldn't do it. And so I thought, I can find a one-year chip for this person. And so I asked around, and this is how it works, folks. One young guy said, "Can she use the used one?" And I said, "Sure." And he reached down in his pocket and he gave it to me. "Colin, come up here and get your one-year chip." We're going to have some fun this morning. The pearly gates of wisdom are open, folks. And the pearls are fixing to roll out on us. And our first lady to strap some of this on us is Evelyn Kay from La Mesa, Texas, 44 years sober. Let's welcome Evelyn.
Because I wouldn't want anybody to miss a word. Well, Lucille and I think the pearly gates are kind of cracking open.
Literally.
I am Evelyn Coger, and I am an alcoholic.
I am.
And by the grace of God, and attempting to follow the things that I've learned through the medium of this program, and with your help and people like you, I haven't had a drink since November 17th, 51. And I'm grateful for this day, sir. Yeah. I think we've seen a lot of gratitude in action this weekend. Golly. And Lucille and I are supposed to be joined by several others. Well, a whole bunch of others. Some of them have gone to the pearly gates, and some of them just hooked them. So this is good as it's going to get till Lucille gets here. I am remiss. The other night, there was a little roasting going on for you-know-who. And Mr. Searcy, and I sat down. You know how you do, or maybe you don't, but when I sit down, I make a pretty damn good talk, and I remember things and comes to me, but they have not let me get back up to do my stunt. One time, early on, my husband's sobriety, he was a bad drunk, girls. Yeah. And he needed it. And this was a little sobering up hospital over in Seminole, Texas, that a doctor in Alcoholics Anonymous had opened. His little old barracks, shotgun barracks, and it was heaven. It was just heaven. Didn't look like much, but God, I was never as shocked and as pleased in my life. So, Cersei comes back. Hell, they came from Dallas. They came from Fort Worth. They came from El Paso. They'd come to the annex and share wisdom. And Cersei gets up. Robert's sponsor, his name was R.C., and his wife's name was Mary. And I loved him to death. Just come on in, Margaret. We'll let you sit down, too. Yeah. And so Cersei comes by and graces us. Hell, he had 2 years sobriety. You know, you've got to respect that. It seems like that's kind of been shelved this time, but 2 years was a hell of a long time. And Cersei gets up and emotes. But before he does, he says, "I'm so glad to see somebody uglier than I am has come into our program." And his wife fell out of the chair in a dead faint. And she did. Yeah. I loved it. You know, that 2-year-old boy got humility instantly. I came in through the back door of Bob's auxiliary, and my drunk husband, who was bad sick, bad off, and I didn't call him sick either. I called him a sorry drunk. He'd never sober up. What happens when you've taken your last drink? Just what color do you turn when you've had your last drink? This boy had no intention of sobering up. And I have to go into his story because it's... Yeah, we were married 42 years, and so our stories are pretty synonymous. Different in many ways. I tried to work his program, but that didn't go for him. This boy had been sober, or had been out of treatment about 3 days, this annex. And he was in La Mesa, and we did a lot of drinking with a lot of people. And Robert ran into him, and he said, "R.C., I got a bottle, as usual." And they always got drunk, and they were sort of traveling drunks. Went after a turkey one time, and it took them, we didn't have turkey that Christmas, that Thanksgiving. I didn't go after him. I went to Big Spring to and drove to the jail, and his wife, R.C.'s wife, I made her go with me, and because I was drunk, and you have to drink if you've got a sorry drunk husband. Now, I don't know about you all. Some of you have turned to virgin white, but not this one. I helped that boy. And she walked in and she said, "Do you have a Bob Coger here?" Said, we sure do, but you can't have him. She said, we don't want him. And we just want to know, dead or alive, or what was happening to him. I started drinking in high school. Sort of come and go. I was raised in a home that had... Well, damn, I guess I'm going to pass.
You
have
the water?
Yeah,
I'm going to pass the water. Yeah. I got some.
Yep. I came in... I started drinking when I was in high school, and I liked the folks that drank. And they're talking about these young people, and God bless... God bless. They've saved my life coming in. But I want you to know something. I got to thinking, you know, it really is tough being work. You know, you're not drinking, everybody else is. It was the other way around with me. I was the one that was drinking, and they were not drinking. And didn't think a hell of a lot of my drinking. But I explained that away real quick. I was in love with feller named Bob Coger, and he did drink and was cute and fun, and hell, I just loved that devil. And you know, I still do. I wanted to kill him a lot of times, but murder, yes. But I knew that I was going to capture him. I didn't know just when, because he kind of would flit off from my wonderful presence. I went to college and took some postgraduate work in drinking and playing. Now, my grades didn't show up well, but I showed up well. I showed up well. And I know that helped me along, but you see, I did capture that devil. And we were going to the ranch. Now, the ranch had a wood stove, and the windows would barely hold in the walls, but it was heaven on earth. So he started repairing it, he and another drunk carpenter. And I'll tell you, we lived in a palace when it was over. We didn't have a wood stove. We had a kerosene stove. You know, class, hell, all the way. But it's all right. It's all right with me. Yeah, it was all right with me. I wasn't going to do a hell of a lot of cooking anyway. I was going to be a cowboy, and... because that's what he was, his family had been, and I loved it. It was glamour all the way. Kind of took the glitter off of it when we married and settled down into reality. And but we did a lot of playing, and we didn't have a lot of money, but we thought his father had more money than he did and would be more generous than he was. Didn't limit us from spending or going or playing or all the things that you drank with. And then we had two children, and we delighted over them, a little too soon. I had Tom when I was a year married, and my daughter Sissy, who some of you know, knew in 15 months. And there were some parents, his father and my mother, and they talked of castration. They didn't think we needed any more little children because they got the pleasure of their company. You know, a lot of people... I thank God my children didn't pleasure me with raising mine. But we'd take them to town, and we'd say we'd be back in a couple hours. And maybe two or three days we'd show up and get those kids and get them straightened out again and get them to the ranch. And And so it behooved us to employ a lady by insistence of parents to live there at the house. And she came to take care of those children. She's still there. The children have been gone many years. But so she and I are kind of keeping the home fires burning. Not too bright. But she saw after those children, and they were taken care of. They were taken care of. Not by me. Not by me. I so wanted to be a good mother. I wanted to be a good mother. I wanted to be a good wife. I wanted to be a good daughter. I wanted to be a civic person that, not a civic cat, a civic person. I just wanted, and thought I was. Thought I was. I had no trouble conning me. None. And a little more trouble conning you, but I did a pretty damn good job of that. Robert's drinking and my drinking progressed. And so then they didn't do the castration, and we had another little boy. And it was the worst of my drinking. And I just shudder when I see these statistics and all the things, what can happen. And I know it does, but not old Esty, you know. There's a lot of things that weren't going to happen to me. Have y'all ever been like that? I'm not ever going to do that. It's not going to happen if I do. And I had a reason to drink. My husband had gotten sober. And that'll make you drink, too. I don't know how Bob's held up so well. Yeah. And drank and fought and cried and moaned and groaned and carried on something awful. But he was sober 3.5 years before I came to the program. And I told him that was his tolerance tester, and he believed it. It really was. How the man did it, I don't know. I loved Alcoholics Anonymous. Loved the people in it. And it was just something. And one day there was a friend of mine who I did some drinking with. She really didn't know how to drink that good. She learned later, but she didn't. And she said, she listened to me. And you know, God, if you can just get somebody to listen to you, whine, hell. And I was sick. Oh, I was sick that morning and in trouble at home. And as some of you have been, I don't know. But anyway, this gal and I rode around and I didn't drink and I didn't... There's plenty of seats up here close. Rode around and, oh, I poured it all out. You know, I could pour me as well as anybody in the world. And I explained to her, and she listened, and she did the unpardonable. She looked at me and she said, "Evelyn, could your drinking have anything to do with your problems?" And I like to have fainted. It took me 2 hours to explain to her that it had absolutely nothing to do with my problem. She was sorry she said it. She said "I'm going to Lubbock tonight." Said her brother was an Alcoholics Anonymous. Her husband was an Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were all going up to elect their first delegate from West Texas. I guess the first General Service Conference. I don't know. And they were going up, and she said, "Let's go up and spend the night with this brother and his wife," who was a great, great lady in Alcoholics Anonymous. Both of them are. Mildred, she lived here a lot of years and carried a lot of water. And so we went. I said, hell yes, I'd go any place to get out of the problems I had. And so we go up to spend the night. I was invited not to stay the weekend. Robert was coming up that weekend to vote or something. I don't know what the hell he did. And Cersei and Margaret were having an ice cream party. And this gang were something. She said, I want you to meet a couple of ladies from San Angelo. And I said, oh, I'd love to, you know, hell, I'd love to. Some happy face. And so we went up there. And yeah, we went to Cersei's and Margaret's. The ice cream wasn't on the first on my agenda when I left. But, of course, I managed to belt her down. Because they caught, well, I don't even like to say the word, but they called me bloated when I got here. Now, I was a little round, than I am right now. Yeah, they said, that was Delnon said that to me, too. She said, oh, Evelyn, you'll be all right. You're just bloated. And let her lips kind of flop. I could have killed her. Yeah. You're just bloated. I got to share that with another lady that was 35 years in the program when she died last year. And I said, I got to say to her, because she was not a prize, I said, Juana, you're bloated. And she never got over it. Never got over it. It's just those cutting things that stay with you. I had known that I was an alcoholic. I could not quit drinking. I used to bring the older children to Dallas. And I had a real good drinking buddy here. And so I would bring them to entertain them at the finer places in Dallas. We'd go to the Century Room, and they, you know, kids just loved that kind of thing. And we'd go to Pastore's on Lover's Lane, I think. A lovely bar. They needed to see the sights of Dallas. And sweetie, they did. Anyway, I went to Lubbock and was introduced to these two ladies, and Lewis Chamberlain was brand new, and he and his lovely wife. And we went to Cersei's and Margaret's, and of the laughter, and these two ladies were, she was right. These two ladies from San Angelo were some kind of funkins. I'll tell you, they were good looking and fun and smart, looked good. They were not bloated. And I got a moment of unclarity. I said, when you all go home tomorrow, would you please stop? I'd like to talk to you. Well, I didn't realize they'd go to any lengths. They had to stay for the voting and the doing and everything. And they came by my house, but I'd had a little problem. I was going to take one drink so I could, you know, settle down. And I did. And I kept settling all day. And I was drunker than a Bee Gee bug when they got there for me to talk to them, and which I did. But I know why. They had 6 months sobriety. You know, they knew everything there was to know. And somebody asked them and say they wanted to talk to them. They had not been approached to be talked to. They were well known in San Angelo. And but I'm going to tell this little story about them. And I think that this is unique. They went to Denver in 50? No, 50. Yeah, 50. Huh? 50. And to the an international? No, hell no. Anyway, they had been to Denver. No, it was younger than that, see? 60
then.
No, younger than that. Anyway, I don't know what the hell they were doing up there. But they went, and that was them. And they went just to help this one lady's husband, and the other one just went along so they could play gin rummy and a little poker and just to, you know, go along and help him out.
Tri-State,
got it. In May. And so they were sitting there playing cards. It was not, they didn't feel required to go to any meetings. And so they were sitting there playing cards, and a fellow walked to the door and asked, said, is Bob Simpson here? And they said, no, this where he'll be back here in a few minutes, in a little while, when the meeting's over. And this fellow said, they said, come on in, sit down, wait for him. It was Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson. And they got to talking to him. And he got to talking. I understand he did a real good job of the talking, don't you? And he talked to those gals, and they asked him questions. It wasn't a few minutes. It was 2 hours. Now, imagine having that kind of, what is a God thing? Having 2 hours alone with Bill Wilson. And hell, they hit the ground a-running. They were drunks. And it was not just something they decided because he said so. They realized how many of the problems they had were directly related to alcoholism. And so they had 6 months when I asked them, see, and God. So they left my house, and my little boy, this little one, the afterthought, the little, I'm telling them what a good mother I am. You know, you have to explain to a lot of people about things. And I did a lot of explaining, God knows. And he comes a dragging through with an old diaper trailing him, and a ear of cold corn, and a blanket. I don't know why he felt insecure. I don't know. But he, and I, every time he'd do that, see, it'd blow my skirt up because I was explaining all this. And finally, when they left, they said, Evelyn, if we come back in the morning, we got to go to Angelo tonight, but if we come back in the morning, will you not take a drink? And I said, I wasn't a bad drunk. I didn't drink till 10 o'clock. Cowboys drank the first thing in the morning. Robert told me that. Cowboys drank the first thing in the morning. I was not a drunk like that. I really did it right. 10 o'clock was the witching hour. And so I said, if you'll get here before 10, I can promise. After 10, it was everybody for himself. But at the last, she'll never forget this, and I was drunk. But she said, Evelyn, it seems to me you want to quit drinking. And yeah, I did. I really did. As I say, I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It had saved my boy's life. And a lot of others. A lot of others. And they were at our house an awful lot. And they were around, the Searcy and the, a bunch of them. And I knew that there were people that I wanted to be with. I didn't think that I could quit drinking. Thought you could. I thought it worked for you. I sure did. I was watching it. I was seeing it. And I want to tell you what a concession. I really was a controlled drinker. Drank every day to control that. But if I was going to get to go to an open meeting, I would not drink after noon. Ain't that control? So I quit the meeting that night. So I knew, you know, I had that going for me. We had an auxiliary, and I helped them a lot, you know. And these gals would come in, and they'd be a whining and a sniffling and a telling about how tough it was and everything. And I said, you don't have to put up with that crap. If you'll take a little drink, it will blow it off. Several have since come into the Alcoholics Anonymous program. But they quit whining about their husband. Because I wanted to start in that because I had the worst deal. I told them that day that they can, and they were 130 miles away, but they were right back there at 9 o'clock the next morning. And we did talk. And they were allowed to talk that time. And I listened to them, and I heard things that I probably had heard around AA for 3.5 years. But from them, it made sense. It made sense. I hoped I could do it, and I told them that, hell, I'd been to Oklahoma City. I swelled up, blew up, blowed everything there was, and I was allergic to something. Happened to be alcohol and anything related to alcohol. And so I'd been up there getting punched and poked with that. And I didn't tell my husband, and he got a letter from the damn doctor squealing. Anyway, I wanted real bad to come to this program. But like I say, I didn't think I could stay sober. And I was looking at continued sobriety. You bet there were some of them coming in and going out. But I was living with continued sobriety. I was seeing continued sobriety. And that was the kind I wanted. That was what I wanted. I said, I'll tell you what. I'm going to, of course, drunks do it their way. You know, we've got such keen analytical minds. We'll tell you how we'll do it. And I did. And I said, you know, I don't know whether I can stay sober. I'm going to try not to drink. I'm not coming to AA yet. Gosh, I've given you all a good coughing lesson. So I said, I'm going to try not to drink, and then I'll come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I say, I loved the people, loved the things we did, I loved the places we went, and it was fun, a lot of fun. When I could be sober enough or not hungover enough to fun with you. And so they said that was fine. You know, rock that way if that's the way you want to do it. And I did. That was the end of October. And on the morning of the 17th day of November, I walked in and poured a drink and invited a friend of mine who had always been able to drink with me. And I said, you want drinks? Oh, thank you. Said, yeah. I don't want to drink. I said, well, that's stupid. I did, and I'm going to take one. You all do as you please. And I did. And literally the bottom fell out for me. All the resentment, all the hurt, all the sick, all the crazy, the whole thing fell in on me. And I am forever grateful. I took 2 or 3 drinks, and it got worse as the more I drank. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that night. Now, I know people, I've probably lied all these years. My birth, I hadn't been sober 24 hours till the 18th this November, but it seemed like it worked for me, so I believe I'll stay with that. You do as you please. But I did come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said, I'm Evelyn, and I'm an alcoholic. Now, I didn't say it that calm. I was bawling like a bull, and I need your help. And you know something happened. Something happened. I not only needed their help, I was at last willing to accept their help because they'd been there all the time. They'd been there all the time. What a treat this has been. What a treat this has been, and a trip, and a trip. And the fun that I've had in this program, and that's not all there is. I sit in a meeting a lot of nights a week. I love it. I came into AA loving it. I got mad at my group one time and ran off and went to other groups because there was a fellow there that I had really, well, I'm not going to say what he'd done, but he made me madder than a dog. And I quit going to the Mesa group. I went to Midland and Lubbock and all around, mad. One night it dawned on me, hell, here I am, driving through the country, because none of the boys would go with me, and I was the gal, and none of the boys would go with me. They had a meeting that night, and it didn't bother me. And I thought, that's the stupidest damn thing. Really, the fella you don't like is sitting in your group, and you are running about. That next meeting I was able to go sit down in that group. I learned to love that old boy after I, thought about killing him so long. And I didn't have instant love. But it taught me an invaluable lesson. He was staying sober. He was staying sober. And I was staying sober, but I was as crazy as I could be. Letting somebody run me away from the group I truly loved. I truly loved. And I walked back in there, and I want to tell you how sensitive and loving my group was. They didn't say a damn word. And they didn't say, we've missed you, we're glad you're back. Hell no. They said, sit down and shut up. They were kind that way. I had loving people around me. I like to share that because sometimes we got a grass bear between our toes, and our people don't behave like they're supposed to, and they hurt our tender feelings. We have romped and stomped over everybody that there is to stomp and romp and hurt. And boy, howdy, somebody say some little something, and they've really done it. Don't hang around. I'm grateful that I've had the Circes and the Fellers. There's no, I hate to tell you all this, because it's going to make you madder than hell. But we have a fella by the name of D.H., and he's been to a lot of these. He's not able to come now. He has 52 years. That'll tell you something wise. I think Cersei told him his health wasn't good enough to come now. I tell you what, I'm grateful for the ones that are hanging in there and that I see at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. The best a drunk can be is sober. Thank you.
Thank you, Evelyn. Aren't these long-timers wonderful? We would have had one more here. Skinny from Bastrop, Louisiana, tried so hard to stay and be here among the long-timers, But his doctor had given him some medicine, and he had a violent reaction to it, and he couldn't stay. But he did try, and I want to mention his name also. And our next speaker is a beautiful lady, Lucille. Will you come up and straighten us up?
The only problem is I need somebody to straighten me up.
Oh.
My name is Lucille, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Lucille.
By God's grace, and because this program has worked so beautifully for me, I haven't had a drink since April the 6th, 1952.
Wow.
And the nice thing about it is I don't want one. I'd give anything if I had the ability to talk like Evelyn does, but I don't. So this is going to be a sober talk. I don't even know where to begin. I was a periodic drinker. And I took my first drink after I graduated from college. I went to the University of Georgia, and I think I'm the only graduate that has the distinction of never having a drink there. Because there was lots of it. But I had to work my way through, and I didn't dare play around too much. I got out of college and went back to Atlanta, which was my home. And I loved to dance, and I went to a lot of dances. And I met a man and fell in love with him, and we got married. I didn't know he was an alcoholic. I knew he drank, but I didn't know what alcoholism was. But boy, did I put my foot into it. I spent the next 11 years being battered. We had two sons, and never a day goes over my head today that I don't say thank you, God, for those two boys. My life was tough. I did some drinking, but not a great deal. But I would drink when he beat me up so bad till I had to have some relief. And finally I said, to heck with this, I'm not going to put up with it. And I got those two young'uns and I took off to California. And I stayed, well, I take that back. The baby was just a little bitty thing, because there's 8 years difference in them. We went to California, and I stayed out there for about a year, and I went back to Atlanta. We never went back together. And he died about a year later from over-drinking. So I was left with those two boys to raise, and I absolutely adored them, still do. And we had it tough. It wasn't easy at all. But I was determined. But I had started drinking. Fortunately, as I said, I was periodic. I never would have been able to hold down a job if I hadn't been. And sometimes I'd go 2 or 3 months without touching it. But once I started, I couldn't stop for a few days until I got so sick I'd have to. And finally, after several years of that, I had been on a binge, a good one. One Saturday night, I had walked the floor all night long. And I went into the bathroom that morning to wash my face and comb my hair before I got those children up. Well, the oldest boy was away at school, but I had to get the little one up. And I looked in the mirror, and all of you know what I'm talking about. I saw me for the first time. And I fell on my knees there in that bathroom. And I said the most sincere prayer I'd ever said, and it was the shortest. I just said, God, please show me the way out. I didn't know anything about AA. But almost immediately, I must have heard about it sometime, somewhere, because almost immediately the words came into my mind when I said, God, please help me. The words Alcoholics Anonymous suddenly appeared. And I got up off my knees and went straight to the telephone and called. And that was back in the days when we did 12-step work like we should be doing now. We're letting somebody else do it for us. All these treatments on us. But I called AA, and they didn't get there fast enough for me. So I called them back, and they teased me for years about that. I think I called them 3 times. And finally, the doorbell rang, and 2 people had come to my home, a man and a lady. And I opened the door, and Sarah looked at me, and put her arms around me, and she said, honey, I understand. And that was the first time anybody had ever said those 2 words to me. And I was so grateful that I think if she'd said, cut your hair or do anything, I would have done it. And that was on Sunday morning, and she stuck with me. And I made my first meeting on Tuesday night. And she and a man came to pick me up to take me to that meeting. And I was still as sick as I've ever been, shaking like a leaf. And I went to that meeting. And all I remember about the meeting was the kindness. The people were so kind to me. And that brought me back for another meeting. But the man who brought Sarah to my home that night, when they took me home, I was still sick as I could be. And he was talking about a minute, and he had 6 years of sobriety, which seemed like an eternity to me. And they were telling me all this stuff. And finally I looked at him and I said, what am I going to do about this horrible compulsion to take a drink? And he said, Lucille, do you believe in God? And I said, yes. He said, then ask him to remove the desire. And that became part of my morning prayer. Please take away the desire for a drink. And in about 10 days, I waked up one morning and I realized I didn't want a drink. And I haven't wanted one since. He gave me the answer. He kept coming around. And he would come to my house and play with my little boy and have a wonderful time. But the oldest boy came home for the Easter holidays. And I went to the airport and picked him up. We went home and I fixed lunch. And we were sitting at the table eating, and I never will forget this. I told him what I had done. And that boy literally leaped across that table and grabbed me up in his arms. And he said, "Mom, you've made me the happiest boy in the world." And that was worth everything. Well, to make a long story short, that man who had given me the answer to not wanting another drink, we started going together. And 18 months later, we announced at the club that we were going to get married. And you never saw such head shaking and tongue clucking in all your life. True alcoholics, it'll never work. But we did it anyway. And we had really an AA wedding. And my oldest son gave me away. He was 15 by this time. And he gave me away. And those boys love what? What was this guiding light in that group? It was a big group in Shreveport. I had moved over there because my mother had remarried after 20 years, and she said, "You need help with those kids," so she helped me out. But we got married and we started making a life. And I think everybody was a little bit astonished at how big well it worked. But it was real funny. Watt had a bad heart. And a big heart, but it didn't tick too good. And he always sat on the front row. And I always sat directly behind him. Several people asked me, "Lucille, why do you sit behind Watt?" And I said, "Well, he doesn't get enough oxygen, and he's inclined to go to sleep." And I let him have this up through the chair, wake him up. But there's so many memories there. All good ones. And we made a home. We bought a house. We had a constant stream of traffic going in and out. AA members. We did a tremendous amount of 12-step work. And my favorite story is when after he died, I was so lost, and I had an opportunity to go in as director of a halfway house for women, and I did it. Most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. I stayed there 4 years. And while I was there, I had my 25th anniversary. Both my boys had ended up in Atlanta through their employment. And the youngest one came over to help me celebrate. And after the meeting was over and we were sitting around the kitchen table talking, one of the girls there had gone to school with him. And she'd heard me talk about all these things we did. And she looked at him and she said, "Evan, what was it like growing up in a home like you grew up in?" He didn't crack a smile. He said, "Perfectly normal home. Lots of love. Lots of security. Perfectly normal home once you learn to step over drunks." Because if Watt wasn't bringing one home, I was. I fed more drunks than you could imagine. One particular one comes to mind. Well, I called me at the office one day, and he said, "We have a house guest." I said, "What else is new?" He said, "This one's different." I said, "Oh, what's different about it?" He says, "He's a priest." I said, "Okay." So I went home, and we had dinner. Well, I was going to take him somewhere. And Bill was a little leery of me. And finally he looked at me and he said, "Lucille, do you have an iron?" And I said, "Sure." So I got up and got the iron and boiled the iron out. And he went back in the guest room and he came back in with his vest, black vest. And it had chili all the way down the front of it. And he looked at me and he said, "Isn't that awful?" And I started laughing. I said, "Just looks like a good drunk to me." And he went up north, but I heard from him for years. And it gives me such pleasure when I think about those sort of things, how little things can make us connect with another alcoholic. But we did a tremendous amount of 12-step work, and I wouldn't take anything on earth for the experience. It was wonderful because we saw results. So many. Not all of them. They didn't all stay sober, but a lot of them did. Another incident that comes to mind was one night. Well, I had a habit when the meeting was over, "Come on over to the house for ice cream." I dipped so much ice cream that after he died, I flat refused to have it in the house. But they brought a new man home. And I was tired, so I went to bed, and we had louver doors between the bedroom and the living room. And there were three or four of them talking to this new drunk. And they were telling him all the things that could happen and how good they were. And one of them said, "You'll even get your wife back." And the old drunk said, "Fellas, do I have to?" I'll always remember that. There was a lot of love and a lot of security and a great deal of fun in my house. And then Watt got to feeling real bad. But he wouldn't slow down. He kept going. And some of you may remember Pete Wasser. His story was in the original big book. He lived up in Tennessee. And he called Watt, and he was going through a period of depression. And he wanted Watt to come up and spend a few days with him. And Watt said he'd go, and he was going to drive, and I was worried to death about it. And I called our friend Joe in Chattanooga, and I told him what Watt was planning on doing. He says, "You tell what I said, stay right there where he is. I'm going to send my plane after him." And Joe did. He had a Learjet. And he sent the plane down and picked him up and took him up there. And Watt had been there a couple of days. And he called me. And we talked on the phone. And the last words I heard was, "I love you." And my sister was visiting from Atlanta, and we had gone out to dinner. And practically everybody had a key to our house. Watt gave them out like you do calling cards. And the ones that didn't have a key knew where one was. And our garage was in the back of the house, And when we came home from dinner, I drove into the garage, and my sister said, "Lucille, there's somebody in your house." And I just laughed. I said, "I hope it's somebody I know." And I got out of the car, and we had a gate around the back yard. And when I stepped out of the car, my boss and our doctor were standing at the gate. And I knew